Brian Lara on WNYC. The media giant Comcast is in the news for several reasons this week, and commentator David Sirota from the International Business Times is all over their case. We'll talk to David in just a minute. First, have you heard this 8-minute piece of audio that has gone viral online of a Comcast customer trying to cancel his internet service? Apparently, the company has what they call retention specialists. Did you know this job exists? Retention specialists whose job it is to talk people out of canceling their service. They reportedly get paid more for keeping more people in the fold. So here's about a 1-minute excerpt of how it went when Ryan Block, a vice president at AOL, as it happens, tried to cancel his Comcast internet without stating a reason.
I am declining to state why we are leaving Comcast because I don't owe you an explanation. So if you can please just go proceed to the next question. If you have to fill out your form, that's fine. Please proceed to the next question, and we'll attempt to answer that if possible.
So, I mean, being that we are the number one provider of internet and TV service in the entire country, why is it that you're not wanting to have the number one rated internet service, number one rated TV service available?
I'm declining to state. We're switching providers. Can you please go to the next question?
Okay. So what is it about Astound that's making you want to change to them?
I'm declining to state. Can you please go to the next question so we can cancel our service?
Okay. I mean, I'm just trying to figure out here what it is about Comcast service that you're not liking, that you're not wanting to keep. I mean, why is it that you don't want to keep that service?
Phone call is a really actually amazing representative example of why I don't want to stay with Comcast. So can you please cancel our service?
All right. A little of the customer service call from hell for one Ryan Block trying to cancel his Comcast internet service. That has been listened to more than 5 million times on SoundCloud. The company has said it will revisit its training of retention specialists, which suggests, as PC World pointed out in an article this week, that haranguing the customer for 8 minutes before agreeing to disconnect may have been what they've been training their people to do. So now let's talk to David Sirota, International Business Times columnist who has Comcast in his sights for other reasons and says New York could have a lot to say about whether the proposed Comcast-Time Warner merger is approved, creating a cable and internet service behemoth with the one company controlling about a third of all cable and what they call fixed high-speed internet markets. David Sirota is based in Denver, but is in New York today. Hi, David. Welcome to WNYC Studios.
Thank you so much for having me.
Your column this week is actually about a case in Tennessee where a community-owned internet service provider that's doing well wants to compete with the big boys. But have you gawked with your ears at this piece of customer service audio along with the rest of us?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And in another part of the audio, they actually make the argument, they say, Comcast does, that they have the fastest internet in the country, which is actually not true, as we'll discuss.
And it was interesting that Comcast Damage Control included saying, despite the call being painful to listen to, the retention specialist did a lot of what they trained him to do, and they would review their training programs. But do we conclude at least then that this is not unique to Comcast, but is corporate customer relations in general with retention specialists and high-pressure techniques?
I would agree with that. I think that this is a commentary on a situation where you arguably have two people who are victims. You have the customer who's a victim, and you most likely have the customer service representative who is being told that they will be punished if they don't do certain things, in this case, retain the customer or at least get a reason for why the customer is leaving.
So lifts a veil on that. Now that one little piece of audio popped out and became an internet sensation. And you wrote to us that New York has the power to block the proposed merger between Comcast and Time Warner. Tell us about this merger proposal and why you're skeptical of it.
Well, the merger proposal, as you said, would create one company that controls about a third of all internet and cable conduits in the country. That is a arguably unprecedented amount of media power. That is power to control the conduits from which you get your information. New York State has the power under its Public Utility Commission, Public Service Commission, to block or potentially put an obstacle to the merger. A number of states where Time Warner exists have these commissions that have the authority under their state law to stop or at least slow down these mergers. It's not clear whether New York State is going to do that, although there has been some words from Governor Cuomo in which he said he's not going to get in the way of this the commission looking at this.
For a sense of how big Comcast is getting, they also own NBC, mm-hmm. NBC Universal, and all their content. And here's a piece on The Street. Some people know that site, the Wall Street and Business Affairs website, The Street, posted yesterday, headlined, "Comcast is now the center which the world revolves around." And it says, "Comcast is now assuming the big bad boy role that was once held by Microsoft and then Google and now also by Amazon, but at that size and that level of questionable ethics in throwing their weight around." So, for example, The Street calls Comcast the lightning rod for net neutrality activists. Why Comcast, of all the internet service providers, on this net neutrality issue of, you know, not having pay for the same speed access for all websites?
I think the big part of it, to your question, is what you referred to earlier, which is Comcast's ownership of content and the tubes. That's a key point here, that it typically had been that the people who owned the so-called tubes, those conduits, the broadband lines, those were different companies than the ones that actually produced the content. Comcast, in owning, for instance, NBC, now owns two pieces of the distribution system, what is actually being produced and then the lines to send it to your home, into your home. And so the net neutrality piece, I think the fear is that the company will use its ownership of the conduit to preference its own content that it's producing and then make it more difficult, if not impossible, or certainly expensive to get competitors' content. So ABC, CBS, et cetera, et cetera.
And this would be a national merger with Time Warner. How could New York block it?
Well, again, New York is a Time Warner state, and the states in which that are Time Warner states, California as well, have public service or public utilities commissions in which they are allowed to weigh in depending on state laws. In New York, there's been discussion about whether to change the state law from saying that a merger essentially can't be blocked if it can't be proven to be in the public interest, to the burden being on the merger companies themselves, that they have to prove that this is in the public's interest. And the question is, though, is whether the commission will use its discretion to even make a ruling, to even and arguably extract concessions. Right? New York can actually say to Comcast, right, in order for us to let this go through, you're going to have to agree to certain concessions, whether that's rate concessions or the like.
And Rupert Murdoch is also pursuing Time Warner. Fox has a competing big offer on the table. Is either the lesser of two evils, in your opinion?
Well, I think the answer is yes. I guess you could put it that way. And I say that because let's remember that this is not a competitive situation. The two things that are happening right now, you have mergers in which fewer and fewer companies control the conduits. And then you also have efforts to restrict local competition to those large behemoths. As you mentioned, and we can discuss the Chattanooga situation, it's a community-owned broadband service that's got the fastest service in the country. That Chattanooga service is from a public utility. It wants to expand. And Tennessee has a state law that says that that company, that utility, cannot expand. That law was passed at the behest of giant telecom companies. And Congress is now weighing in to tell the FCC, do not use your power to preempt those state laws. In other words, do not use your power to allow local competitors to Comcast.
Listeners, we have big oil, we have big agriculture, we have big internet in America as an industry at this point, and a few companies perhaps, or one, about to get much bigger. Call in and talk to International Business Times columnist David Sirota if you want, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And tell us about the Tennessee case you wrote about this week, obviously with national implications, involving a community-owned internet service provider trying to fight the big boys.
There are hundreds, if not thousands, of public or quasi-public utility companies across the country. Chattanooga has one of them. Many of those utility companies are developing smart grid technology. That is to use high-speed fiber optic cable to communicate with all of the energy distribution systems in their jurisdiction. What Chattanooga discovered was that, hey, we already have this infrastructure, or we're building out this infrastructure for our electricity needs and the community's electricity needs. This can also be a conduit for high-speed internet service, broadband service, into our customers' homes. And we can provide it at a market competitive price. And so what happened a few years ago was the Chattanooga utility opened up its service to the community and now provides the fastest internet service in the country, some of the fastest internet service in the world, for roughly $70 a month. And this has been a boon to the tech industry in Chattanooga, to the small business community in Chattanooga, obviously to customers in Chattanooga. And now Chattanooga, which is in a state where one in five people do not have access to the internet at all, it wants to expand the service, and in particular to areas that have been underserved in Tennessee. And what's happened is that previous to all of this, Tennessee passed a law saying that municipal broadband companies, publicly owned utilities, cannot expand beyond their jurisdiction. So the Chattanooga utility can't go outside of Chattanooga. This is one of 20 laws like this in the entire country that were passed by the big telecom companies to restrict municipal taxpayer-owned broadband, because the big telecom companies, for obvious reasons, don't want to have to compete with anybody, much less a taxpayer-owned, not-for-profit kind of system.
Let's talk about this as taxpayer-owned. You use the terms community-owned internet service provider with respect to that group interchangeably with publicly owned and municipal. Are we talking about government-provided internet service competing with companies that do the same thing?
In Chattanooga's case, yes. The terms, you're right, they're fluid. Some of the utilities are almost co-ops where they're customer-owned. In Chattanooga, it is a utility in which the city, the actual city itself, the municipal government, which is, you know, a.k.a. the taxpayers, own the utility that runs the internet service. And the thing is that the old narrative is that government, when it owns something, is inefficient, does things poorly, is slow. I mean, when you think about government-owned internet service, I think a lot of people probably think, well, it's probably going to be really slow. Again, it is the fastest internet service in the world. And part of the reason, at least the proponents of this say, is because it can take the revenues that it makes and put it directly back into building out the network rather than paying it out in terms of shareholder dividends or executive salaries.
So here's the policy issue. The congresswoman there, Marsha Blackburn, a conservative lightning rod, wants Congress to pass a law that would block the FCC from overruling states that want to block community-owned internet providers from expanding. Now, that's a lot of people blocking people from blocking people from blocking things. So can you unpack that for us?
Sure. I look at it this way. The FCC has the power to say to local communities and local utilities, you can expand where you want, right? The Tennessee law was actually an anti-local control bill, just like it is in 20 states, saying to cities inside the state, you may not or we may restrict you from expanding your publicly owned internet service. We're going to take away your local authority to have a publicly owned internet service. So the FCC retains the right to say to those states, that kind of state law against local municipal control, we can overrule in the name of expanding internet service. And Marsha Blackburn, who is from Tennessee, who's taken a lot of money from the big telecom companies, is now passed an amendment, at least in the House, to defund the FCC, specifically the FCC's authority to overrule that state law. It's a big win, at least for now, for the telecom companies.
Let's take some phone calls. Steve in Hillsdale, NJ. Hi, Steve.
Hey, how you doing, Brian?
All right.
So I just wanted to comment. It goes back to partly the little fun 8-minute clip that you can hear on SoundCloud. He said that Comcast provides the fastest internet or something along those lines, and I laughed out loud. The problem with Comcast, when I moved here, I used to live in California, and I moved to New Jersey. Both times, I would only available to me one internet service provider. And in California, it was Time Warner Cable, and here in New Jersey, it's Comcast. I couldn't switch if I wanted to, and I know that there are faster internet available. Google Fiber isn't available for me, and I know that's faster. It's just incredibly frustrating to think that they could have even more control.
This speaks to the dual phenomena that are happening now. You have a merger creating a bigger Comcast. At the same time, you have Congress using its power to prevent local municipal competitors to Comcast. Those are two things happening at the same time.
Melanie in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Melanie.
Hi, Brian. I love the show. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I'm trying to find good internet service. I don't really watch television, and so I was watching really closely the case following the Avino, I think it was called, Barry Diller's, the internet free, practically free, that people could get television. So shopping around, I realized that there's no way. Everyone I talk to, they're paying like $150 a month for basic internet and phone and television. I mean, you can't get, it's like a price fixing, and it just seems to me that there's some sort of collusion among these companies to keep us fixed to cable. And I just don't understand why the public TVs like PBS, ABC, NBC, and CBS don't come together, Fox, you know, the free ones, and just offer that kind of internet thing that would be absolutely free, because it would just, people can't afford it. They just can't afford this kind of money.
Melanie, thank you. And I think you raised one of the really central issues here, monopoly or quasi-monopoly, and an unusual solution, which is that the big networks band together to give people free internet to get their programs.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, this gets to the fundamental question of what is deemed a public utility and what isn't. And we go back to the era of the railroads, in which there was this idea of a common carrier. Common carrier is now an FCC term, which deals with whether something is so central to commerce in the country that it becomes a heavily regulated utility, which gives the government all sorts of powers to make sure that there's equal access. This is part of the net neutrality debate. And I think we're finally getting to a situation 10 years, 15 years into the debate over internet policy about whether the internet is a utility, if not a full-on human right in the 21st century. And I think those are the kinds of questions that all of this is raising.
I once asked Google CEO Eric Schmidt at an event in front of an audience whether Google, because of its power, should be regulated as a public utility, because it's, you know, search function is so ubiquitous that should they then be regulated with respect to how they can use that to advertise and collect data and things like that? And the audience laughed. Now, that was about 5 years ago. Maybe things have progressed to the idea where that question wouldn't be considered laughable.
Well, do you know what audience isn't laughing about that is Europe. Europe, in passing the laws to essentially compel Google to erase certain things in the past, this so-called right to forget, which I think is highly controversial in the sense of, are there censorship issues about forcing a company to delete information that's actually public information? But setting aside all that, Europe, I think, has taken the attitude, or is taking the attitude, that Google is more of a public utility because it is so dominant. And I think that's the fundamental question here. It used to be that you had a choice. Either companies were so big and had so much market share that they were broken up with antitrust laws, or they were regulated as a utility.
Uh-huh.
The question we're facing now is whether we want to allow those behemoths to simply exist without doing either thing.
Right. And I was just going to bring up that exact point and ask which is your preference. Would you rather see Time Warner and Comcast merge and, you know, have so much of the internet service market and then be regulated as a public utility and some of the other really big players in that market, or see the government act more like trust busters, try to encourage things like this community-owned provider in Tennessee that you wrote about, and try to break it all up?
I would say the latter. I think it's, there is clearly a model there. There's 100-plus cities that have managed to eke out municipal broadband services, and there's plenty of opportunity for more of that. It's a very straightforward path for the government to use its antitrust powers and authorities in the FCC to simply say, we're going to create an environment in which those entities can compete, those nonprofit, community-owned, taxpayer-owned entities can compete with the behemoths. Let's at least see what happens when we have that. Right now, we're getting a situation, at least from Congress, in which the two companies are probably going to be allowed to merge into a behemoth, and Congress is also using its power to prevent local competitors.
Catherine in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. We've actually just been discussing this and trying to get Fios into our home, and weren't shocked to see that it's still not here. We live in Brooklyn, and I wanted to find out if there are ways we could pressure companies to come into our neighborhood. Right now, we only have Time Warner Cable as an option, and it has just been a disaster. So are there ways citizens can work to try and pressure other companies to bring more competition? I know Fios was supposed to have come into 75% of the homes in New York City. That was the agreement, but from what I can see,
or at least
the availability
be available to that many homes to compete with the cable companies.
Yeah, the one answer is this, is that New York is not one of the states that has one of these laws on the books that prevents municipal Wi-Fi competition. So that's an important thing to know for your city council, your state legislators, et cetera, et cetera. The second point that I would make is that every so often Comcast or Time Warner or the combination of both has to go to a municipality for franchising rights. That is, they have a debate over all of the uses of the common areas underground, the pipes underground to lay the cable, et cetera, et cetera. It's called these franchising agreements. And the cities at those points in time, and I think it's once every 10 years or so, can extract concessions. One of the concessions that a city council potentially could say is you have to allow a competitor, or we're going to potentially offer a new franchise agreement with another competitor. So those are other access points to this politically.
And I guess as we wrap up here, that's another way to see the future, is that, is it really a monopoly? I mean, I know the cable companies are deathly afraid of Verizon Fios, and so maybe we are in an era of competition and not monopoly.
Well, I think there are sporadic examples of some competition. It is certainly not a functioning free market, to use that term. It is not a functioning competitive free market, especially when you have the government, Congress, potentially using its power to weigh in on behalf of one of the behemoths to prevent competition. And I think that as we move forward in all of this, if we can think about how do we actually create competition with a commodity that really is a public utility, and I think that's the key jump. We have to see the internet as a public utility, and then from there we can have the conversation about how to create a competitive market. Because if you don't see it that way, then you'll probably just say, "Well, look, it's a private market, a private business, and we'll just see what the market does."
The internet as public utility in the 21st century, and how to ensure that we have reasonable, affordable access. David Sirota, author and senior writer with the International Business Times. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.